The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Hundreds of thousands of tenants are facing further rent increases, which are linked to rising inflation. Now, this is because a new policy was brought in by Housing Minister Dara O'Brien. It has backfired to some extent because the idea was that rent hikes would be pegged to inflation, and the thinking was that inflation would be relatively low and therefore the rent hikes would be relatively low. We are now in the period of highest inflation that we have seen in many years, hence it isn't quite having the effect that we might have hoped. With us is Eoin O'Brien, who is Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Mid-West and spokesperson on housing, local government and heritage. And I'm also joined by singer Paul Byron, who has recently denied a rental property simply because of his choice of profession. Guys, morning to you both. Eoin, I'll start with you. It looked like this might be at least some help. It has turned out to be the opposite.
No, in fact, unfortunately, we knew this was going to happen. When Dara O'Brien introduced this legislation, he claimed that inflation over the previous 4 months had averaged out at 0.7%. And therefore, if your rent review was pegged to inflation, it would be effectively zero. The problem is, in the month that Dara introduced the legislation, inflation was already rising. It was 1.9%. It then went up to 2.2%. In August, it was at 3%. And Charlie Weston, writing in the Irish Independent today, has quotes from a number of economists suggesting it could pass 4%. We told Dara this on the floor of the Dáil. And in fact, what's really tragic about this is, when I was first elected to the Dáil in 2016, the very first piece of legislation I introduced back then, before we had the runaway rents, was linking rents to inflation. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael opposed it. In fact, they opposed it not once, but five times over the course of the last Dáil. So at this stage, when rents...
But why were you willing to do it then and criticising them for doing it now?
Absolutely, because this was the point that we made. Back then, we were only beginning to see the start of rental inflation. And therefore, if back in 2016, you had linked rents to the harmonised index of consumer prices, for example, you wouldn't have had the double-digit rent inflation that we've had over the intervening period. The problem is, because Simon Coveney's rent pressure zones didn't work, rents were never effectively capped for most renters in high demand areas at 4%. Fast forward to 2021, and rents are now so high. I mean, the average rent in Dublin is between 1,700 and €2,200, depending on where you live. That what we need now at this point is a 3-year emergency ban on rent increases.
Can you explain something to me? How is it, in your view, that the market is not functioning the way you would imagine in that case? Because if rents are so extraordinarily high, the effect of that should be to suck landlords into the market, getting buy-to-lets out there, but that hasn't happened.
So a couple of things. Over the last 4 years, a very large number of Celtic Tiger era accidental or semi-professional landlords have left. So we've lost 20,000 rental units net over that 4-year period. At the same time, because the government weren't building enough social houses, every year they were taking about 15,000 rental units from the private rental sector to be subsidised through the housing assistance payment for people waiting on social housing. And a lot of the new rental stock coming into the market is urban city centre apartment high end. It's 2,500 to 3,500 euros. So rather than the government doing what they should have done back in 2016, 2017, peg rents to inflation then, focus on getting social housing tenants into real social housing and apply large supply large volumes of affordable cost rental accommodation, they did none of those things.
Can you address the first of those, though, Eoin? Because they're, to some extent, it seems a little paradoxical, because the Celtic Tiger rental landlords, as you describe them, accidental landlords, people who ended up in negative equity and had a house or a flat that they didn't want really to be a landlord, but they functioned as it. If that was profitable for them to do, and if it wasn't so mired in bureaucracy that it didn't take all of their time up, surely that housing stock would still be available.
So the Residential Tenancies Board had published in August a really, really important piece of research looking extensively at attitudes of landlords and of tenants. And one of the things they asked the landlords is, why are they selling up? So first of all, you have what we called accidental landlords, people who never intended to be a landlord, but because they bought a property and couldn't sell it because of negative equity, held on to it as a landlord. Once they returned to positive equity, they were getting out of the market. And that's what kind of happened 2016, 17, 18. But also you had a lot of what we called semi-professional landlords. So these were people who bought a single investment property. They were encouraged to do so by Section 23 tax breaks by Fianna Fáil. And they thought being a landlord was a passive investment. You just bought a property, put a tenant in, and you were fine. being a landlord's a full-time job. And I know that because I'm a tenant, so I see what my landlord does. It is not.
You're a demanding tenant, are you?
I'm a very relaxed tenant. But the point is, you're providing a service, and there's a lot of regulation, so there should be, as there is in any other business. But things go wrong. Stuff breaks, stuff needs repaired, etc. So a lot of what we call semi-professional single property landlords who also fell into negative equity had very high Celtic Tiger mortgages. When positive equity returned to the market, they left as well.
But surely if the rents are so high, if they're in positive equity, I mean, there's a limit to how many times you have to fix a dishwasher and a boiler. I mean, you're not going to be living in the house with them. If it is that profitable for them, surely a big proportion would say, I'm coining it, I'll stay in the market.
If you have a very high Celtic Tiger era mortgage, for example, if you're stuck with a mortgage, say, 1,200-1,400 euros, which wouldn't be unusual, if you are fully compliant with regulations and taxation, there's a strong case to make that actually some of those accidental or semi-professional landlords, the single property landlords, were probably just about breaking even, right? Keep in mind, one of the problems with our rental market is rents are so volatile, they fell to the floor in 2010 and now they've shot up to the ceiling. Where in fact, the proposals we made back in 2016, back then would have been good for landlords and tenants because they would have given you certainty. Here's our difficulty now. Our difficulty now is rents are far, far too high. And the kind of supply that's coming into the market is too expensive to meet large volumes of workers who need average rents. So government has to intervene. And that's not just our view. For example, Sherry Fitzgerald have made this point, their chief economist, at a number of conferences. Government needs to step in, supply large volumes of affordable rental accommodation, either directly through councils or through approved housing bodies, at good quality rents. But urgently, we have to stop rents rising. And I also think we have to put some money back now, in renters' pockets.
Can I ask you about that?
Through a refundable tax credit.
Because in many instances where you discover that there is an affordability issue, what governments will do is they will say, well, the intervention we should make is with those who can't afford the price, to subsidise them so that they are able to make whatever the market price is offering. In the instance of rent, we tend to say the opposite. We should intervene with the seller side and limit what they can charge. Why take that approach? Why not do rent subsidies to the individual renter so they can meet what is open market rates?
Well, first of all, we do rent subsidies. 100,000 out of 300,000 rental properties are subsidised by the state through RAS, HAP and rent supplement. And that's costing the state €1 billion this year. It's a very hefty subsidy. The problem is you have this other group of workers and it's a very, very large group. And there are people who would be on 45 to 75 grand, and depending on their household, it could be singles and couples. They're not eligible for any subsidies, but nor can they afford the runaway rents that are there. So they're now paying, in some cases, 40 to 50% of their take-home pay.
But it's about them that I would be asking. Why not say, well, let's help them rather than hinder their landlord?
The best way to help them is actually to provide a very, very large volume of affordable rental accommodation into the market. That's what they do in other European countries. So we accept that there's a group of people who need a subsidy. We also accept that there's this other group of people who don't need a subsidy at all. They just need to rent at the economic cost. And for example, that economic cost could be as much as 700, 800, or 900 euros a month if we developed large-scale affordable cost rental accommodation here. Government have been talking about it since Alan Kelly's housing strategy in 2014, Simon Coveney in 2016, Darragh O'Brien now. But they're only going to produce a few hundred of those units this year. They might get 1,000 units next year. Like, we have a huge rental sector. So until government accepts the advice of the Housing Agency and the National Economic and Social Council and Sinn Féin, we need every year thousands upon thousands of affordable cost rental units into our market. That means then that you're able to provide good quality affordable rents without a subsidy for modest and above modest income working people, including people who are looking to save for a deposit but can't because of sky high rents.
A couple of texts come in, someone in clear agreement with what you're saying. Small time landlords are taxed at 50%. That's why there are very few semi-professional landlords. Anton, landlords are leaving the market every day because they see all their rights disappearing and the law becoming a bad tenant's charter. Anyone who stays in the landlord game is a mug. Well, we want to have a look at it from a tenant's perspective, or rather from a potential tenant's perspective, because Paul Byram, the singer, is with us. And Paul, I would have thought somebody with a fairly long, successful history of selling music both here and internationally, touring here and internationally, you would have both the means and the capacity to fairly handily find rental accommodation. That wasn't your experience.
Certainly not, no. And you know, here's the thing. I want to start off by saying there are a million people probably in this country that are in worse positions than me. You know, people that have got kids, people that are, you know, on 3 or 4 months' notice and they're going to have to find somewhere to live. All of those people are in a far worse position. Whereas I'm in a position where I'm renting at the moment. I've been renting for the last 3 years. I used to be a landlord, and I tell you, it was a horrible experience as well. I mean, I had one tenant at a time who just decided to stop paying. We just couldn't get him out, and all the laws at the time were stacked heavily against me. So I know what it's like to be a landlord and to have a bad tenant.
Why did you get out of being a landlord?
Partly because of that, but also because I threw my hands in the air at it. I was like, I'm done with this. Let's sell it. Let's get on with it. Let's move on. So my plan was save up, get a mortgage for a house down the road. And that's potentially where I'm at the moment, trying to save up, but whilst renting. And it's myself and my girlfriend. So it's not even just me on my own. And my girlfriend, as my granddad would say, is in the real world. She's got a real job.
She's a proper job.
She's got a proper job, you know, a respectable job. And so we saw a house there that we wanted to rent recently, and we put in the application, and it was the same realtor that looks after our apartment at the moment. And as I said, I've been in the apartment for 3 years now, never missed a payment, never missed a rent. I would pride myself on being a good tenant. And when we went to see the house, everything was perfect. And the realtor says, look, you know, shouldn't be a problem. Now, the only thing Paulie said is that the owner is going to want to be the management company. We're not going to be involved in that. So he would be your point of contact. I said, that's grand. And he says, on the basis of that, he'll want to meet you in person. I said, well, perfect. That's grand. Most people like me for about 10 minutes. So I said, I should be grand. Well, we were sitting waiting, and then we got a phone call going, listen, Paul, just about the house. We put in two applications, yours and another, and he's gone with the other because he's a little nervous, and you're in the entertainment industry. And so with COVID, after annihilating your industry in the last year and a half, he feels that you wouldn't be a good candidate. And I was like, well, sorry, you told him that I've been renting off you for the last 3 years, and despite this pandemic, I never miss one payment. And she said, well, you know, it's not our call. And we told him you were an exemplary tenant.
And I presume you have receipts that can show all this if he wants to see it.
But sure, we had to show all the paperwork. We had to, like, references. I had to get letters from my accountants. Catherine had to show payslips. I mean, you were just short of giving a blood test, you know. And it struck me as it was a real kick in the teeth because, you know, in the last year and a half, I'm lucky, as you mentioned, in that I have an international following. So I've been able to do online concerts, and I've been able to kind of, you know, keep my head above water. But, you know, the last year and a half, the music industry has been treated appallingly in this country. And it has, we always knew we weren't treated great, but the pandemic has highlighted that we really are disregarded in this country. And we
but
love
you
our
were
poets.
Nonetheless, you were flush sufficiently that the rent wouldn't have been an issue.
Not
that
a
you
problem.
Could have. So, where does it leave?
Sorry,
you?
Now, needless to say, I'm not loaded. I'm no Bono here, like, you know, but I'm certainly not like just struggling and starting out. And so, you know, as Catherine said, did he not even just Google you? Like, and that's not blowing smoke. But, you know, all he had to do was just Google me and check that I'm not somebody that's kind of just hoping to be a singer, or, you know.
So what do you do now?
Well, I'm fortunate, as I said, in that we're not under pressure where we're at. But it's trying to find a bigger space is a problem, clearly, for somebody in the music business. Trying to get a mortgage for somebody in the music business is near impossible. Trying to get car insurance for somebody in the music business is near impossible. This is a country who, by and large, at this point in time, disregards my industry.
Well, what about those issues, Owen? Because there are very few markets you can point to where the participants on both sides resent the experience, where the semi-professional landlord says this isn't worth the candle, and where tenants, buckets of tenants for various different reasons, say it is a nightmare dealing with landlords. How do you deal with that issue? Because that's separate to availability.
So first of all, there are very, very large numbers of landlords, particularly the new institutional investors, whether they're producing new stock or purchasing second-hand stock and leasing back to the councils, who are making very considerable sums of money. In fact, one of the great inconsistencies in a rental market is landlords who own a single property, if they're fully compliant with the law, pay quite a high effective rate of tax once they've deducted all of their deductibles, whereas institutional investors pay virtually no tax whatsoever. And we're starting to see now. So the tax regime that Michael Noonan and John Moran put in place to attract the institutional investors means they don't pay tax on the rent roll, they don't pay capital gains tax, and depending on where their investors are located, they may not pay any dividend withholding tax here in Ireland.
Now, the idea being that would incentivise them to construct construct yeah. exactly the housing
but,
that we
but the
say
difficulty
we need.
Is if you're a fully compliant landlord with one, two or five properties and after you deduct, for example, your mortgage or your insurance through that tax deductible, for example, if you're paying effective rate of tax of, say, 40-45% and you're looking at another landlord who's paying no tax at all, it's hard to understand. But here's the problem. A lot of the properties that are now being sold by the semi-professionals and accidentals, they're being bought by institutional investors who are small, medium-sized institutional investors. They're now leasing those properties back to the local authorities for 25 years for extortionate long-term leasing arrangements for social housing. In my own constituency over the last 5 weeks, we've had over 60 such properties. They had tenants in them. Those tenants were evicted by the landlords who sold the properties to get out, bought by institutional investors who are now long-term leasing to the local authority at 90 to 95% of market rent, and the council doesn't own the property at the end. So everything about how, particularly under Fine Gael, our rental market has been structured is in the first instance exceptionally bad for tenants. What I would say is this, because we also need to be honest about it. I meet a lot of landlords, right? And I see landlords who are struggling, but I also see landlords who are making a very, very good return, right? The difficulty is that being a landlord is not a part-time thing. I mean, that's your experience of it. And therefore, we have to work with industry to help them professionalise. In Germany, they have single property landlords and they have big institutional investors and the system works
but
very well
why
for
do
both.
We, why do we simply accept it as a universal truth that being a landlord is not a part-time thing? Why is it not possible for people to be able to say, if I want to invest by buying a rental property, I should be able to deal directly both with the system and with my tenant and it not be heartbreak and
it shouldn't.
Costly.
And look, let's be very clear. For the overwhelming majority of tenants and landlords, it's not heartbreak. And I know that because I rent. But what you have is, at the fringes, you have issues where, exactly as been described, you may have tenants who don't pay rent, or likewise, you have landlords, for example, who don't do maintenance and withhold deposit, etc. One of the difficulties is when those cases arise and either the landlord or tenant goes to the Residential Tenancies Board, a determination by the Residential Tenancies Board isn't legally enforceable. Either the landlord or the tenant who wins the case has to then go to the High Court, and that can take 6, 9, 12 months, and it's
with
very expensive.
With all of the attendant costs and everything else.
All RTB determinations, whether affecting landlords or tenants, should be in and of themselves legally enforceable and enactable immediately after the decision is taken by the RTB. But let's be very clear, they represent a minority of the cases. We need much, much better regulation of the private rental sector to stabilise that sector. So a decent landlord providing a good service can make a fair return, but also a tenant knows they get real security of tenure, affordability of rent and a decent place to live.
Couple of texts on the topic. Anton, I'm a one house landlord with no mortgage and I'm thinking of selling up. By the time I pay tax at 55%, then pay maintenance costs and have to listen to tenants asking for every small thing to be fixed but never look after any issues, however small, I was a tenant myself once and used to do small jobs when needed on my rentals. However, some tenants are totally dependent on everything to be done for them. It's more hassle than it's worth. No tax breaks and expected to provide services that I don't even have in my own home. It's ridiculous. Another high rental crisis should be solved in a month if government reduced tax rate for landlords. I'm currently paying 52% tax and rent is frozen at a rate where I am actually losing money. This is why landlords are leaving the market. More short-term tenancies would help too. People move around in today's economy. Very briefly on, whatever about the long-term solutions of the provision of affordable housing, short-term, what needs to get done?
Well, first of all, just to say, landlords do get 100% mortgage interest relief, so they do get a sufficient support from the state. What we need is a 3-year ban on rent increases, a refundable tax credit to put 8% of rent back in a renter's pocket every month, and a significant investment in affordable cost rental. We also need a conversation to have a single tax regime for all landlords that is fair and equitable, something that doesn't exist at present.
Owen O'Brien, Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Midwest and spokesperson on housing, local government and heritage and singer Paul.